So I'm gonna shift gears a little bit, and this is gonna be quite general to aquaculture as a whole, specifically recirculating aquaculture, but feed has come up many times today. Every session I've been in, alternative feeds have been mentioned, and so that's my focus for this session, is looking at what those alternative feeds are and sort of why it's important. So just not knowing the whole audience, just to briefly go over aquaculture sort of worldwide. Since 2014 onward, the world consumes more aquacultured seafood than wild-caught seafood. It's a segment that continues to see growth year after year, even though capture-based fisheries have been stagnant since about 1990. That graph you can see there, the orange is wild-caught fisheries, and the blue is aquaculture production. So you can see that line has been pretty much dead stagnant, and that's not due to the lack of increased fishing pressure or effort. It's because there's not more fish to catch. And that kind of brings me into this whole thing on feed, because historically, well, here we'll talk briefly about feed conversion. So aquacultured fish, as the world needs more fish, that line again is just climbing every year. As the world needs more fish, needs more protein, fish is there to take up that deficit. And the reason why fish are really ideal to help meet the demand for protein is because of the feed conversion ratio of fish, and that's feed in versus fish out. Seafood aquaculture production has one of the lowest feed conversion ratios of any animal protein production that we currently have. But how are we going to meet that increasing demand for protein if we don't have more fish to feed to those fish? Right? So the biggest thing with fish feed is, historically, the majority of fish feed was made from fish meal and fish oil, which I'm dubbing marine raw materials. So that's historically wild-caught fisheries, foraged fish mostly, that have been processed into their meal and their oil, incorporated into a pellet. This graph here shows, this is all salmon feed in Norway, ingredients over time. So in 1990, over almost 90% of all ingredients in salmon feed were marine-derived, either fish meal or fish oil. Since then, up until 2013 is what I have data for, that number has decreased already to 30%. That's amongst increasing salmon production over that whole time. The amount of animal protein going into fish food has been decreasing drastically. Now the question is how, well, two questions. How and why do we drive that number down further? We're all growing or planning to grow a lot of fish in Maine, and we need to do that in the most environmentally sustainable way possible. To do that, we need to remove as much marine-derived raw materials as we can. So the why is easy. We need to be more sustainable, and the fact of the matter is we can't harvest more fish from the oceans to feed more fish that we want to grow. So we got to find other sources for it. How? The industry's kind of taken care of. So these are some, a very small sampling of players currently either working to develop alternative feeds or producing alternative feeds. You can see spreading, EWAS, one of the major fish feed manufacturers worldwide, are devoting millions of dollars to alternative proteins because they see that it's needed. They can't source more marine raw materials. They need to increase their feed production. And the fact of the matter is, with that increased demand comes increasing cost. And so they need to find cheaper, better sources. And so what sort of novel ingredients are there? These are sort of very generalized topics, but just to briefly go over, processing waste is sort of the low-hanging fruit. Already, about 30% of all fish meal worldwide is produced from fish processing waste. So instead of harvesting that fish from the oceans, we're recapturing heads and guts and other waste streams into fish meal and fish oil just from non-target fisheries. Hmm. Insect ingredients, that's a huge burgeoning industry, one that I, prior to my work with American Unagi, worked with. We were growing black soldier flies as experimental alternative proteins. And black soldier flies worldwide are sort of the insect protein right now. Sort of going back here, Protix is a company in the Netherlands. They have developed that friendly fish logo up in the top there. That's a fish meal free salmon grown with a bug based diet. There's a couple more, but I didn't put them on here. There's too many. there's companies in every continent, basically, that are putting hundreds of millions of dollars currently into building facilities to grow black soldier fly larvae for its protein and for its oil. So the one thing about insect protein or insect meal is that there's a lot of fat in it as well, which helps replace that fish oil segment of feed. Microbial products are another huge potential avenue for proteins and for oils. The great thing about them is they are highly scalable because they're being done in reactor vessels. They can be done anywhere, and they're often using industrial wastes. So bacterial protein is a single cell proteins that are use either CO2 or methane fermentation. So they're taking like methane waste out of a smokestack, converting it into protein that can then be refined and incorporated into a feed. And then algae, the great thing about algae is that they can produce omega-3s. And that is sort of the biggest roadblock in replacing, in completely replacing fish oil from a pellet, from a fish feed, is the lack of omega-3s in a lot of these other ingredients. Plant-based proteins are already what the industry is kind of replacing a lot of it with, whether it be corn or soy or wheat. But there's a lot of novel ingredients coming out in that sector as well. Looking at things like barley protein, barley differs from those other three in that typically it's non-GMO, requires very low inputs, and is the lowest cost grain of all the commercially available grain crops. So they're looking at microbial refinements to make protein concentrates out of plant-based proteins. So with that, I open it to discussion. I just want to kind of get everyone there.
What you mentioned algae when you were talking, or you were talking about microalgae, the one cell?
Microalgae.
Oh, okay.
Is there mushrooms in any of that?
I believe he is.
I don't know if it's doing something with microalgae.
Is Mooksy
burnt? Yeah, I believe they're doing fermentation, or, yeah.
Selling
that or something. If it's based fermentation, yeah.
Thanks.
At spreading, we get their anchovy, anchoveta, the herring,
yep,
from Peru primarily.
Yeah.
And that's what we process, that we're doing research on the algae oil primarily, the soldier fly. The stocks aren't that large.
Not yet. Yeah, the investment is there. It's scaling.
Yeah,
certainly.
But it's ongoing.
Yeah,
with research.
Yeah.
So I might pass it to the end of that graph. The typical marine inclusion rate currently is about 5%. in the typical green diet right now.
Yeah, so it's it keeps decreasing, and it's, I mean, it's decreasing for economic reasons probably more than anything, because fish meal and fish oil is getting ever more expensive, and we need to keep costs competitive.
Polishins is part of the Sea Grant network that Gail mentioned this morning, the RAS network with Maine, Wisconsin, and Maryland. And we just had our first meeting, and there were some people from Scranton there talking about how not only are they having to develop feeds that are specific to RAS systems because they need to be much more, as you know, David said in another meeting, everything comes down to fish poop. You know, the fish poop need to be much more compact and much more able to be filtered out more easily, so that your water stays nice and clean, that your fish are nice and happy and healthy. But one thing they were talking about is not only are they having to design feeds for RAS systems specifically, but they're now having to look at what kind of certifications is the company going to want for its seafood when it goes to sell it. Is it going to be sustainable, you know, MSC? Is it going to be best choice? Is it going to be, well, in the U.S. we don't have an organic standard, but there is an organic standard for seafood in Canada. And they do, they are bringing a feed online, Scredding is, for that Organic Canada standard, but it has a very limited ingredient list because of all the things that you're not allowed.
Yeah, just to piggyback off that, I went with the Black Soldier discussion. I know they're in Europe. When you start talking about consumers and you start talking about growing insects on industrial waste and then that working its way up the food chain to human consumption. So there's, you know, and as you point out, that's in Europe, and what would happen in Canada, what would happen in the U.S. So, you know, being an international company, Scredding really has to kind of straddle a lot of those lines.
And what's interesting is that black soldier fly larvae was approved for use in fish feed in the EU a few years ago, but only if they're fed on fruit and vegetable waste. Mm-hmm. And so what Josh was doing, you want to talk a little bit more about?
Yeah, sure. So black soldier flies are they're awesome little critters. They will eat anything you throw at them. We always used to joke about, like, if we wanted to really make some money, we could get into the mob, and they would disappear. We bring in morts sometimes from various facilities, dead fish, and within a day they'd be gone. Whole fish. Yeah.
Our RAS feeds are specifically fecal binding.
Yeah.
Materials. That's
yeah.
That's the ingredient.
But I mean, you were feeding.
But we were feeding primarily tofu waste from Hewa down in Rockland, and so we were. Primarily, it's pre-consumer food waste is what goes into black soldier flies. The industrial stuff that I was talking about is mostly CO2 and methane for the microbial proteins. And I mean, being able to scrub CO2 out of a facility is great from, you know, from a carbon standpoint and from an ease of production. But black soldier flies are great because they can process what's otherwise going to go to a landfill, pre- and post-consumer food waste. Whether it be animal, you know, or vegetable, or of any kind, they're quite efficient at it, and they not only do they produce an excellent protein and oil, the end product is also a beautiful friable compost. The insect frass, right back to poop. always comes back to it.
Can I ask the panel, is there anything that you're particularly excited about when it comes to sustainable feeds or some of these new novel ingredients? Is there anything you're following? Or?
I'm always following black soldier flies. I can't help but follow black soldier flies. One of the things I think is really interesting is using, instead of converting some of that processing seafood waste into fish meal and fish oil, you know, some of the companies, I think Scredding is actually looking into it as well, as direct inclusion into pellets. So cutting out that extra processing step and direct including some of it.
Yeah.
So the more important part about this that excites me is the reduction of food waste and circular economies, where you're taking food waste, as Josh mentioned, and you're putting it back in the human food chain. Because there is embarrassment of food waste in this country, unfortunately, and so getting that back into the food chain for human consumption is of real importance. And that's one of the more interesting areas. And not only that, but this is not a single point industry. that there is a ridiculous explosion in this sector, and it's really showing creativity, and it's allowing people to branch out versus not just one thing, but what they see in their backyard and how to turn that into a new resource to feed the world. And that's what excites me about this industry. And it's also price stable, so it makes your fish more price stable.
Question in the back?
When you first started talking about processing waste, the first thing that came to mind was how the same species using processing waste to feed the same species is what brought us to mad cow disease. So, do you have an answer to that?
I actually have a slide a little bit about that coming up. So,
okay.
I will talk just a little bit about that.
Do you have anything that you're excited about?
Well, actually, kingfish recently in the Netherlands, we've been trialing some new feeds. So, kingfish. Has a full larval phase that only eats a live feed, and then we move on to a pellet later on. But copepod development is exploding. Cryoplankton is a new company that we've been trialing feeds with, and just being able to maximize efficiency of the hatchery process and streamline the variability that can sometimes occur with different diets, it's hugely beneficial. So as we trial some of those things, it's great to see that the sector is really pumping a lot of energy into that part of things. So, and we've had good success thus far.
Any other questions on this one topic? All right, so I'm gonna talk a little bit about waste streams, and then we should have about 5 or 10 minutes at the end to wrap up. Maybe a couple more questions. I'm not sure if we're one of the groups that has to come up with a research question. Anybody know?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we'll come up with a research question. Or a couple. Okay. So I am just going to talk a little bit about waste streams from RAS. I'm going to focus pretty much on the waste streams that come actually from the fish. There are other waste streams from a RAS facility, but I think these are some of the really interesting things that are going on. Found this great graphic, fish farming expert. So if depending on your species will depend on what your yield is. So like when we were doing yellowtail, we had what, about a 50% yield, David, for fillet versus the whole fish?
She's
got
more yellowtail.
I was gonna say, well, specifically for when we were doing it, about 50. So you have to think about all these different things that come out of a fish. I remember, it's probably Ian Bricknell, it's probably a lot of people saying that we're gonna get to a point in the aquaculture industry where everything other than the fillet is going to become more valuable than that fillet itself. So we have to start thinking about all these different avenues and what we're going to do with all of them. You know, how to take things out of these different waste streams and out of these different things to make our businesses more vertically integrated, to get into value added, to do all of these different things. So I just wanted to highlight a couple of different things that are in play. Salmon racks, so that is after you've taken out the fillet, sometimes after you've taken off the head, you pretty much got the tail, some bones, a little bit of tissue. There has been debate, somebody was saying maybe it's going to get passed again, or people are starting to talk more about it. The reason that salmon racks have been prohibited for lobster bait since 1999 was when we were having a lot of issues with infectious salmon anemia virus in the net pens down east. And so they did not want to worry about salmon being taken from an area where that pathogen may be present and introducing it into another area through lobster bait. However, as bait prices continue to rise, Maine is approving some non-native baits being imported from other parts, so why not try and produce something right here? So is there a way that we could show with these RAS systems where we're filtering water, we're controlling all of the feed, is there a certification scheme that we can come up with to certify them pathogen-free for this kind of a use? Another thing that's pretty cool is a lot of people are using fish skin and fish scales. Lucy is a student in product design. She is not a scientist at the University of Sussex in the UK, and she just won a James Dyson Prize for her senior project, which is this Marina Tex. She was working with red algae, but it kept crumpling up. It kept trying to revert to being a seaweed. And so she found, she was looking at different waste streams from different places, going and looking at dumpsters, going to different industrial processing plants, and she found that the fish proteins from skin were nice and flexible, so that gave flexibility to the structure she already had. And so this is a cool new product, and she's got a nice website, and she's starting to develop it. Also, there's been an explosion, I think, in about the past 5 years for salmon skin. People are making wallets, they're making jerky, they're making dog treats, they're making everything. So that's another thing that we need to consider. A couple other things. So your question about the whole mad cow. So there are specific waste streams from fish that are considered unfit for human consumption, which means you cannot feed them to something that is going to be eaten by a human. So whether that is, you know, livestock or whether that is fish. So usually that is more of the viscera, the bone, cartilage. There's certain tissues, so it does get sort of categorized at that level. So I was just looking online for fancy dog food. How much do people pay for dog food? I've never had a dog.
Too much.
This is $85 for a 25-pound bag. And it contains whole fish, it contains freeze-dried fish, it contains whole fish products, liver, organs, cartilage, everything. And they were specific to say that they dry it at a low temperature. It is not hot rendered and all of that. So say what you will, there are industries out there where people will pay a lot of money for things that we don't need. Yeah, so a lot of these are included either in a pellet form, but a lot of it is rendered or dried and powdered and then added into other things. This is also the sort of things that are available in aquarium fish feed. So again, that's a pet food that's not going to be eaten by anybody except your cat, if you're me. you have to put a lid on the beta jar. Another thing, so as Josh was talking about trimmings, reducing the need for wild fish meal. Having that high protein content, that high amino acid content, is one of the things that makes it really useful for use in not just fish feed, but also in livestock feed. And so these are the sort of things that are allowed for things that are going to be consumed by humans. I think that is all I have.
Just to piggyback on sort of that momentum, and to kind of hit on that question at the back again, fish meal and fish oil doesn't only go into fish food. A lot of it also goes into chicken feed and pig feed.
Paul's slide from this morning with the cow and the
that
sort of thing.
So rendering some of that back into fish meal and fish oil doesn't necessarily mean that waste stream has to go back to feeding fish. It could go to feeding other animals instead.
And there's the whole other line of fish oil for humans in terms of pharmaceuticals and what grade does it need to be and what source does it need to have in order to be sustainable and pure. Question in the back of the semester.
Not a question, just a factual correction.
Yes.
It was a preventive measure to prevent ISA from coming to Maine because there was ISA in Canada and there were rats being sold into the Maine lobster industry from Canada. So we, the industry, took the initiative to get it outlawed.
Thank you.
And then the other piece is that I love your slide on using the salmon and looking at the different what are called waste streams, but I will tell you categorically there's no such thing as waste in the salmon industry anymore. Every one of those pieces that you identify or that people think of as waste, those farmers now put to some use. And it used to be that some of it used to be thrown away or composted or whatever, but it's now not even called waste anymore, it's called a resource or a product. And so if you compare whether it's salmon or any other food fish for that matter that's being farmed to say poultry or to swine and look at the yield percentages there, it's really quite astounding how different aquatic animals in particular are to terrestrial animals in terms of the percentage of the carcass that shows up as either a food product or some other product in the economy. It is truly amazing how virtually everything in the animal is used now in some capacity. But the most important thing is for many fin fish, they are the highest yielding animal that is grown in terms of the percentage of the animal that goes to human consumption. So if you compare fish
of any other terrestrial animals, the yields on fish are much, much higher than terrestrial animals. The reason that's important is because when you talk about environmental impact, you have to think not just in terms of the impact on the farm, but how much you have to grow to satisfy the demand. So if you have to grow twice as much pig to yield the same amount in the marketplace, you are effectively doubling your environmental impact. And that's one of the real powerful things about aquatic animals is that they are very high yield from a harvest. So, okay. Great session, interesting stuff.
Thanks.
Fascinating to hear your questions.
Yes, yeah. Very.
You know, it's fascinating to me how the aquaculture industry in the last few years, particularly regarding feeds, has responded to what you mentioned, certification, consumer pressure, and NGO pressure. Because what you saw in mid-coast of Norway, soon, because we started using so much soybeans, and that was on the relationship that we were fishing down marine food, farming up marine food webs and fishing down marine food webs. You heard that sort of the NGOs saying that against aquaculture, that we're not contributing to global fisheries. So then we started moving over to soybeans. But it was absolutely fascinating as the Brazilian rainforest began to get burned. Immediately, you had a whole group of Norwegian small producers saying no more soybeans in their feeds. They were refusing to do that. And they switched completely. And that went to some of the French supermarkets and the other high end. And they started getting much higher prices to take on a more expensive feed. So that is, the feed stuff is so exciting right now because people are actually talking about a future of firming. Of you've probably heard that word, of fermenting all of these feeds and or other sources and using them all for fish feeds. And that all of a sudden raises a whole new phase of aquaculture's development that doesn't necessarily need agricultural resources at the quantity. So forget about marine resources, we can move almost completely away from marine resources. And in the future, almost move completely away from a lot of agricultural sources and be literally the most productive, most efficient food production systems in the world for 10 billion people.